Welcome to the Growing Rural Podcast, where we focus on all things rural in South Carolina. We will discuss topics on healthcare, economy, education, and the unique culture that is our rural state. This podcast is supported by the South Carolina Center for Rural and Primary Health Care. Please join us for today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Growing Rural Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Bennett. Our guest today is Dr. Yvette McDaniel. She is the director of the Denmark Technical College Choir and an internationally recognized classical soprano right here in Denmark. Welcome, Yvette, to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming to Denmark Technical College, visiting rural Bamberg County, and for thinking that this would really be an interesting story.
I'm definitely looking forward to talking to you. And as she said, we are here on site in Denmark at the Denmark Technical College campus. I've never been here before, so this is a nice eye-opening experience for me as well.
Well, thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey through life that ended you up here in Denmark.
Well, it's a pretty long story, so I'll cut it way down.
That's great.
I was born in Georgia, but my parents, my grandparents, and my great-grandfather went to Claflin University. And my great-grandfather was on the board there, the original board. And my parents moved back to Orangeburg, thinking we would attend Claflin, and my brother nor I did.
Oh, okay.
But while in Orangeburg, Claflin and South Carolina State offered incredible opportunities. My student teacher was Donnie Shell, who's in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay.
And Sam, the Lion King and the King Under the Sea, he was my drama coach in first grade.
Oh, interesting.
So I had lots of opportunities growing up in rural South Carolina. And so I wanted to always be an opera singer. And I went to Pfeiffer University. It was Pfeiffer College at the time. Then I went to the University of South Florida and eventually ended up at LSU. Don't hate me, Carolina fans. but there I was a fellow, and I studied with Martina Arroyo, who is an incredible Metropolitan Opera star.
Okay.
And I was singing at the time. I'd worked with other stars from the Met, including Mignon Dunn. Leontine Price held my face when I turned 30.
Wow.
So I talked to Beverly Sills, and I had lots of opportunities, not at LSU, actually in South Carolina. And so I was teaching, I'd moved back, my parents were ill, and then they came to me at Denmark Tech and said, why don't you come to Denmark? Because nobody's ever been to Denmark who's done what you've done.
Right.
And so I came, thinking to stay only 2 years. I had some health problems and challenges, and I just fell in love with the kids. I fell in love with the family atmosphere. I had a very supportive administration, and so I wound up being here, and I look now, and it's been 20 years.
20 years.
20
wow.
years.
So what was it about the kids and the family atmosphere? What is it exactly about that really drew you to staying here this long?
Well, my first year here, I was able to entice some really talented kids to come. Mm-hmm. And the administration was so supportive that we got to do some things that other colleges didn't do. I was able to take them to the Bahamas. They sang for President Clinton and the National Black Caucus. They opened for some older R&B groups like the Manhattans and the Emotions. And everyone was so supportive, but these kids were so talented. And they needed a school like Denmark Tech to add value so that they, in turn, would be ready to go out into the world in whatever their careers happen to be, because there is no music major here.
Right.
So I was teaching chefs and accountants and kids who are now teaching in Dubai.
Right.
And so, you know, you just had this feeling that you're making a real difference. These kids just wanted to sing.
Right. And singing for them was a hobby, right?
Well, some of them have gone into the profession, but for most of them, and they still continue to sing, It's a way that they can express themselves, have fun, stay relevant and current, and so they brought that exuberance.
Okay. So you said they're all doing various things right now all over the world, it sounds like.
All over the world.
And you still keep in touch with these folks?
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm legally blind, so right. I can't use Facebook, but they Facebook me, and they let me know what's going on. They come when they come home, they visit, you know, have several out in California attempting the entertainment business. And I said, you know, Peter's over in Dubai, and they're spread out.
Okay.
And so I am fortunate that they care enough to stay in touch.
So you came here 20 years ago, you said.
20 years ago.
Where were you right before you came here?
I was singing.
Singing.
I had my little apartment in New York, and I was doing what I did. And
so in Manhattan?
In Manhattan, Midtown.
Okay.
That place would cost a fortune now.
Right, right.
And then before then, I was at Claflin, and before then, I was in New York. So I was in and out. You know, while I was at Claflin, I was allowed to live in Europe for a semester and do auditions and do singing. And then in summers, you know, I'd go back. Salzburg, I love.
Yeah.
You know, staying right across from the Mozarteum and the Mozart Gardens. And so, it's just been a really good time.
Yeah,
good
journey. Yeah, that's quite a journey. So what was it like basically coming from an area like Orangeburg, Bamberg County, going to Europe, going to Manhattan? What was that like for you internally, mentally, culturally? What was that experience like?
Well, for me, I started going to Europe when I was in college as a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the 80s, it was not what it is today.
Okay.
People tried to see if I had a tail.
Wow.
I had people who were from various places in Africa think I was African and couldn't understand and became very offended when I could not speak with them.
Right.
It was really wonderful. It was exhilarating, but it made me, I think, one of the biggest patriots that you ever want to imagine. I mean, I cry when they say we're out of international waters and we're back over America. We're in American waters. I mean, it's just, it's wonderful to go.
Right.
It's better to come home.
Yeah. So what was it like living in Manhattan? How would, if you were to compare and contrast Denmark to Manhattan?
Manhattan was fabulous. Because I was a young artist and talented, I got to have experiences that only the rich and famous have, not being rich and famous. So I would get tickets to the Bolshoi, you know, front row seats at City Opera, you know, taking the limousine with my teacher over to something.
Right.
And then studying.
So to speak.
Yeah, but then being poor. So, I mean, I was there the day that a lady called President Trump, he wasn't president then, and told him to tear down his building because he was blocking her view to Central Park.
Okay.
So those were the really fantastical experiences. And then the day-to-day was not bad because I would go out and sing. So the cold months, I'd make sure that I was singing down south.
Right.
And then
right.
I'd come back and I'd be back in New York. So it was good.
So what did you learn living there and working there and the people? What did you learn there that you've brought back here?
That you have to take the people and the place for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very wise uncle who said, you can't get away from the city.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember that, then you don't take it personally. You understand these are the people that I meet every day.
Right.
There is no better, there is no worse. They're just people.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's striving, trying to get ahead, trying to make moves and do things so that their lives are comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought that back here and try to meet the kids where they are, the administration where they are, the community. I mean, you have to understand that people are people and everybody has the same kind of dream to be comfortable,
right.
to grow, to be accepted and respected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, then typically you'll have a great time, make great friends, and have wonderful associations.
Right. So the people that you meet here, that live here, do you see them as having different kinds of dreams, different kinds of outlooks on life, or do you feel like it's similar everywhere you've been?
It's pretty similar.
Is it?
I mean, the way in which those dreams manifest are different. The circumstances are different, but the same. I mean, you go anywhere, you have poverty. There are people who live here as if they are not rural.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, they do the fast food every day. They don't cook. They don't grow anything. Typical things that you would think would happen in the South.
Right.
There are kids here who say, look, I'm going to go be a star.
Right.
And they have as much opportunity as that person living in the city because of the way, of course, the internet is now.
Mm-hmm.
But that same drive and passion is there. So people are different and values sometimes askew.
Right.
You know, I found that there's a huge trust issue in rural South Carolina.
Same.
You know?
But trust in what?
Trust in each other.
Okay.
Trust that everything will be fair and equitable.
Mm.
Trust that justice will prevail. Mm. But in New York, there's a trust issue that justice will prevail.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So, you know, I found somewhat that the city is more rural than the rural.
Okay.
So you just have to take it for what it is.
Right. So over the past 20 years, have you seen any of those attitudes or dreams or even opportunities change? You mentioned the internet as an influence.
I am able to assist students now more easily with connecting to various entities, especially those that want to do performance. It's not so much, you know, day in, day out, dogged, you know, we got to go to Columbia today, we have to go to Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the internet has made it possible that my entertainment lawyer's in Wisconsin and
right.
the publicist is in Charleston and these kids get those benefits. But I still really have found that it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Just faster.
Just faster, yeah. Everybody finds out about you sooner.
Yes.
The good, bad, and ugly.
And right? ugly.
Right. Tell me a little bit about your students. Do they mostly come from this area, or are they from different parts of the state, or who are they like? What are they like?
Well, the students today are primarily from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The ones in choir are primarily from our three service areas, Bamberg, mm-hmm. Allendale, and Barnwell counties.
Mm-hmm.
But over the 20 years, I've taught students from Alaska,
wow.
Jamaica, New York, Washington, I mean, all over.
Right.
And they come to Denmark because we have dormitories, and they have relatives nearby.
Okay.
And they either need something that we offer, such as the entire focus on social and emotional growth,
mm-hmm.
which are things that happen at HBCUs. We mm-hmm. make sure that students understand their worth and have a niche whereby they can continue to grow and be comfortable,
right.
realizing that they will not be judged because of the color of their skin.
Right.
And while we are in 2019, 2020, we understand that there are indeed still prejudices out there.
Right. Right.
And so we give them a safe place. And especially with these new kids,
mm-hmm.
this I or Z generation, they are really looking for a safe place.
Right.
And they find it here at Denmark Tech, our dormitories, our faculty and staff. It's that whole family thing of, if you miss class, I will know.
Mm-hmm.
The president might know.
Okay.
I know the vice presidents will know.
Right.
And somebody will knock on your door and say, what happened?
And check up on you.
Exactly.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities. I know we have several throughout the state. I think we have eight. In our state.
Eight HBCUs and, well, seven and one PBI, predominantly black institution.
Right.
And we are a sisterhood.
Right.
In that we understand what happens and how we go about assisting students in a very unique way.
Mm-hmm.
Not offering a handicap, but offering value.
Right.
In four areas, either emotionally, socially, academically, and sometimes spiritually.
Right.
Because many of them are religious affiliated.
Mm-hmm.
So we are here to serve. I didn't go to one. I mm-hmm. lived one when I was younger.
Right, right.
And my parents, of course, did. But it's unique. We are getting together February 8th. to make sure that we promote a genre that was born out of the enslaved people, gospel. And we're doing gospel live at Harbison Theater.
Oh, okay.
And each school will bring a choir. It's not necessarily a gospel choir.
But a choir.
But a choir. And we are all excited. So if this airs before February 8th, know that it's going to happen. If it airs after February 8th, we were fabulous.
We will put this out before just because of that. That sounds fascinating. And that's, 10 minutes from my house. I think I'll have to be there for that.
Well, that's great.
So it sounds like HBCUs are more than just academics, right?
I think all colleges are.
Right.
I think every college has its
own some colleges are less than others.
Well, true.
Let's be honest.
That's true. But HBCUs have a niche and offer history and a legacy on which many of the students build and grow.
Right.
Parents having gone to HBCUs, relatives.
Right.
Here at Denmark Tech, however, we have a large number of first-generation students.
Oh, wow.
And I'm fortunate in being a fourth-generation college student.
Wow, okay.
And teaching kids who never dreamed that they would ever go to a college.
And so that's a true leg up. That's a step forward, a lot of progress for a community, for the not only for the individuals, right?
Yes. I have one young lady in choir who was a dual enrollment student over in Blackwell Hilda, and she actually graduated with a general studies certificate before she graduated high school.
Oh, wow.
And so she's come here to continue her education. She wants to be a forensic scientist.
Oh,
and so
cool.
She's in criminal justice, and then we'll be in our science program.
Okay.
So it's neat to watch her experiences.
Right.
She got to meet Nancy Pelosi.
Oh,
because
wow.
We sang for the Democratic caucus. We didn't know we were going to.
Oh.
We were in Washington at the invitation of Representative Clyburn.
Okay.
To help raise money during what they call their gospel extravaganza.
Okay.
And that morning, the night before, they said, you're going to sing for a caucus. I said, okay, well, I don't know what we're singing for, but I told the kids, get ready. And so we're in there, and they're like, no, you're going to sing for the Democratic caucus. And I said, okay. And we're in the hall, and Maxine Waters walks out, and these kids are going, and this little freshman's going, and she talks to them, and she's nice, and she tells them, I'm going to miss you. So we go in, Ms. Pelosi's standing up there, all, you know, Steny Hoyer, all those guys. And they were like, okay, Denmark Tech. And we started to sing, and it was the funniest moment.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew Nancy Pelosi had a sense of humor
or
could be entertaining. And she was just so funny.
Oh, yeah.
And then she was excited. The kids did well. I was so proud of them.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, okay, come take a picture. And she had all this energy about these kids.
Right.
Who this was, for some of them, this was their first trip to Washington.
Right.
You know, and they're eating breakfast in the Lincoln Room. And they're singing for people they see on television. They're calling their parents going, I don't know her name, Nancy. And their parents are going, Nancy Pelosi, yes. So, I mean, and I just name her because she actually came by. We were touring.
Mm-hmm.
And she was about to go in. And she remembered we did an arrangement, Joshua, for the Battle of Jericho, Battle for Jericho by Moses Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked by and she was singing. And
she
grabbed one of the kids and took a picture. And, I mean, it was a really special, very human moment that makes this all worthwhile.
Right, which they wouldn't have had otherwise without the music.
Exactly.
And without Denmark Tech being here.
Exactly.
So if we were to lose our HBCUs, there'd be a lot of loss to the communities, correct?
It would be.
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, our students, because of the need at Denmark Tech, not all HBCUs, but being in this area, and you can research what is happening in the school systems here, they do need a little bit of retooling.
Right.
And without this college, many of them would not feel safe going somewhere else. It's not a physical thing. It's an emotional, social development thing.
Right.
To, you know, be able to stand toe to toe and say, I am competitive. I do have the skills to be successful.
To be prepared and to be assured that they can go to USC or Clemson.
Exactly.
Or
and we've had them do all of those.
Right.
You know, they don't just leave here and go to HBCUs.
Right.
We have Clemson graduates. We have USC graduates. We have College of Charleston graduates. We have A&T, North Carolina A&T, and Spelman and Morehouse. You know, these are not kids who are not bright.
Right. They just need that extra.
They need that extra time.
Extra transition period.
Yes.
And that's what you guys provide, right?
Yes, we do. Denmark Technical College has afforded me, as the enrollment has gone down, you know, there are not that many students in our service area, and we've had some challenges as a school that is financed by several of the poorest counties in South Carolina.
Right.
So our enrollment has suffered, and the number of students that we've had that have the ability to be in the choir have diminished.
Right.
I have wonderful kids. Mm-hmm. And when I say kids, some of them are 40. They're alumni. And they come back. So we've had the opportunity to have what we call an alumni student ensemble.
Oh,
and
cool.
So the alumni come in, and what it does is it offers to these kids almost a university setting.
Right.
Whereas an undergrad would be sitting by someone getting a doctorate in music.
Right.
Well, it affords us the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We grow because the freshmen and sophomores, we only have two levels, get to sit in with the professional musician or the kid who comes back every year to do coronation. And they get to grow and learn from them.
From that shared experience.
Yeah, and then go out. So when we did the Democratic Caucus this summer in Columbia, you know, I had kids who were like, oh, I talked to Joe Biden and he, like, spoke. It's like, yes. And the kid, my old hat are like, oh, well, you know. And but it helps that whole thing of I'm special.
Right.
And it's the growth that we want to see happen at all of our colleges and especially at our HBCUs.
Right. You also work closely with the South Carolina Arts Commission, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
So tell us a little bit about what they do and your work with them.
Well, I have to backtrack just a little.
Sure.
I began working with the South Carolina Arts Commission as an artist in education and a South Carolina touring artist 35, 40 years ago.
Wow, okay.
And they helped supplement my career. They paid when I did performances with symphonies and in schools and toured. And they really provided to me an opportunity to travel and to know South Carolina, but also to get my professional chops up.
Right, just
so,
the experience.
Yes, I'm here in Denmark, and I have a student, and I call and say, you know, what's going on now? I don't understand exactly how it works. Of course, it has changed in the way it funds and things like that. Susan Duplessis, who is the program director for the Art of Community Rural SC Initiative.
Okay.
And that's what it became.
Right.
Talked to me. I'd met her before, and she said a light bulb clicked. She was looking for someone to head Bamberg County and their effort as an arts entity in this whole Promise Zone designation and how it was going to help this area.
Okay.
And so she thought of me. I live in Orangeburg. I said, ah, no. She said, okay, well, come on. I thought they wanted us to do a concert.
Okay.
So I was prepared. I got a committee together.
Right.
And it was not that. It was this thing that has become incredible work about the community, about using arts and culture to enhance lives and to offer hope and to honestly change the way people see their community and themselves, thereby, we always say, assisting in the promotion of well-being. Because without feeling as if you are worthy, without feeling that there is hope and help, we often sink into depression as well as to exasperate any kind of health problems that we might have. And so we think, well, no, we know
right.
that we're doing really incredible, valuable work.
So through the arts, you've seen people in the community respond and come together and have that sense of hope and future and...
All of it.
Okay.
We were given a whole $1,000
okay.
to do something.
It's a whole and lot to do.
That's
nothing.
A whole lot. And so we were able to clear a blighted lot.
Okay.
Not knowing that this lot in the 40s was an incredible spot for Black culture.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It's rumored that Aretha Franklin, on her way to Allendale, South Carolina, stopped there and performed.
Oh, wow.
It was called the Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
And it had fallen on disrepair and all kinds of problems. And then the person who owned it was not here and couldn't get it cleaned. And she allowed us to clean it.
Huh.
And after we cleaned it, people started to tell us stories and reminisce. But the community around it, of course, had fallen into blight.
Right.
But they came together and they said things. One of my quotes, and it makes me cry, is we have a drug-addicted young mother who said, Dr. McDaniel, I don't even understand what you guys do here, but I know I can sit here. They will bring my children and I can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's safe.
Right.
I'm not clean yet, but I know it's safe. And I look for your car.
Mm.
I mean, you know, when you hear those kinds of stories, you know
right.
you're helping. The kids that come and get to craft and get to play and get to learn about nutrition.
Mm.
And it's amazing, but the fathers bring them.
Hmm.
The kids are influencing the fathers to do better and eat better and to grow. And they're proud.
Right.
They're proud of the things they do. And then we bring to them different kinds of arts.
Hmm.
You know, these are primarily African-American kids who sat and listened to country music.
Right.
And I know this doesn't sound like an art, but they were able to participate in an auction. We gave
okay.
them tickets. They had to earn them through soft skills.
Interesting.
And so they had these tickets, and they spent 60 tickets on M&Ms. We didn't quite make the nutrition, but, you know, they wanted them.
It's for the sake of art. That's okay.
That's okay. So they've been able to do things like chalkboard art competitions, and
we
do that for the adults.
Right.
They receive journals. You know, they get a jazz band. We brought a magician in.
Oh,
you would be amazed how many kids have never seen a magician.
Why?
And so... Yeah. They really start to think of this as theirs.
Okay.
And they keep it clean. They don't steal. I mean, we thought when we first went out there, we had a wreath that we had handprints from people from 80 years old to 2
okay.
that made this wreath. And we left it up outside
okay.
in the weather, in the rain, and I would go by every day. And I would ask Ashley, okay, have they tagged it? Has a gang cut it? Has somebody?
Right.
No.
Nobody touched it.
Nobody touched it. For 2 weeks, we left it up.
Okay.
And that's the kind of respect that area gets, but they start to respect themselves when they're there. And we have another initiative called Winter Wonderland. Winter Wonderland, we initiated because I asked my co-chair, we call them co-mavens, Mrs. Cindy Hurst, what we could do to bring aspects of the community together, because it's not a racial thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a class thing. It's a thing where people just don't talk. They don't visit anymore.
Right.
They don't communicate that way.
Right.
And so I said, well, can we have trees on the lot? Will the churches bring trees? Will the causes bring trees? They don't have to be Christmas trees. Any kind of tree with lights.
Okay. Just a decorated tree. Right.
And so people responded. The first year, we had 35 trees
wow.
on this lot. And we had First Baptist, which is a predominantly white church here. And they took little Barbie cans and clothes because they do food giveaways and clothes giveaways.
Oh, okay.
And so they used it as garland. It was so creative. And we had churches that you know, just put white candles out. And we put that, we call that church row. And then we had organizations. There's a lady here that does lupus, Ms. Richburg. And she's a lupus survivor. And she ordered these purple lights because that's a lupus color. And they were the most magnificent lights.
Oh, wow.
Well, that was the first year.
Yeah.
Last year was the second year. We had 72 trees.
Wow, so double.
Yes. I mean, Walmart gave trees in honor of the Shiny Foundation. We had 6 trees from Denmark Tech. We had a photographer to come out and take pictures. We have a kids area with nutcracker trees and Santa's rocking chair, and they do books and the book club. And
wow.
I mean, it's just amazing. And WJBF came and they did an expose. We had one of the scariest stories. Mm-hmm. Living in New York, this is a New York influence.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting out there because we couldn't get anybody to guard the generators. The first year we had generators.
Okay.
And so the young lady who takes care of me, who is an incredible singer,
mm-hmm.
Ashley Marie Jordan, and I sat in a car every night for 10 nights.
And guarded the generator.
We sat there, and the people in the community bothered me and said, "Doc, are you all right in the car?"
Right.
I could not get any sleep.
Right.
But one night, we were sitting there, and it was kind of in between times, probably about 11:30, 12 o'clock, and this car pulls up. And to me, everything's dark. So I see this car pull up and these lights and the doors swing open. And I'm thinking, New York, we're going to die. Somebody's going to kill us. And the doors fly open and these guys get out. And I'm going, "What's going on, Ashley?" "They're getting out. They're going in the trunk." I'm like, "Oh." And this kid gets out with this tree.
Mm-hmm.
And this other kid gets out with this bag.
Hmm.
And we get out of the car. And he said, "My mother just died.
Oh.
My cousin said, bring you all her Christmas tree."
Oh, wow.
"You'll take care of it."
Yeah.
I mean, touchy.
That's a
moment.
Wow.
And so we told that story. And the family, you know, we honor them for honoring us with her tree.
Right.
And so, I mean, those are the kinds of experiences that make it all worthwhile.
Right. So what do you think it is about a shared place like that brings that community together? It's the place with the arts, with the unity. What all is it that really helps?
We have a lot of people who want to interact, who
mm-hmm.
miss the connections of long ago.
Right.
And when I say that, I'm not talking about the racism or the segregation, but we lived in a gentler time.
Right.
And we have become a very distrustful world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one place that everyone knows will be safe. No one is judging anyone.
Right.
No one says you can't. Everything is a possibility.
Right.
And people love you to love their children. That's their most precious
right.
jewel.
Right.
And the respect that we give them, even in trying to get them to understand you must have soft skills. You need workforce development. I mean, we pay kids, the six-year-olds, $3 an hour to help us fluff trees.
Right.
And roll tires. And they work an hour. They might work 4 hours.
Right.
If they sign up to come, we pay them because
right.
we want to teach them those values.
Mm-hmm.
But in teaching them those values, their relatives, guardians, parents, brothers and sisters see that it's safe.
Right.
And we will honor you for who you are,
right.
especially the creative expression portion,
mm-hmm.
which nobody's ever wrong.
Right.
If your Santa has 5 eyes, your Santa has 5 eyes.
What would you tell other communities who were looking to create this kind of space? How would you tell them to go about doing it, setting it up, planning for it?
I have very little wisdom on that in that we fell into it. No, really.
Okay.
We fell into activities that I grew up with or wanted to grow up with. We fell into activities and things that the committee members wanted to do. We were able to visit Kentucky and see how a group of people really came together and said, "Let's do this."
Right.
And so my only advice would be the way all of the six mavens work, which is find what's needed and try to fill that.
Okay.
In Jasper County, they're working on literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And in Allendale, they're trying to bring the business community in line with the desires of the community. In Blackville, it's about public art and public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about finding a niche, understanding what that niche will do,
right.
how it will help,
right.
and especially You know, we're arts people.
Right.
And so we want to bring that to the table.
Right.
And as long as we continue to find ways in which we can help, whether it's singing at health ministries or whether it's having the campus open, we're getting ready to have a South Carolina VAN, Victims Assistance Network, right on campus because they found out about the arts. They're not arts. We're going to take some decorations, but
right.
If you just keep going.
But through the arts, these opportunities have popped up.
Yes.
You hear a lot about the challenges in rural areas with disparities in healthcare or education or any number of things. But tell me from what you've seen and experienced, what all is good about rural South Carolina right now?
Rural South Carolina is pushing the envelope.
Okay.
We are looking to spread our wings.
Mm-hmm.
We are influencing other parts of America
mm-hmm.
that people don't know because of work such as that which is being done at the South Carolina Arts Commission.
Right.
We are building a pride, a different kind of pride, and we are shattering stereotypes. People often see the South for its negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now presenting the positives.
Right.
We are understanding what we need to brand as a part of our legacy. But most importantly, we're growing.
Mm-hmm.
We have gotten rid of the distrust that kept Disney from settling in Santee and
right.
kept 95 from coming through Denmark.
Right.
We are looking for opportunities to grow. And opportunities to say, we are here.
Mm-hmm.
This is who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Accept us.
If you were to define rural, how would you define it?
It is a place. It is a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's a category.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we meet, such as we don't have the population.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the hospitals.
Right.
We don't have a lot of things.
Right.
There are things that we meet. We do have agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
We do have small communities. We have caring. And so when you talk about categories, you have to take the good and the bad.
Right.
Because they have no face. They have no personality.
Right.
And rural to me also is personality.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that I'm an old country girl, so living in New York, I went and found fresh tomatoes and
right.
put my feet in the grass.
Right.
I had to go to Central Park or upstate because I miss trees.
Right.
So it's that feeling of home. And the things that rural people value. Living in Louisiana, you made Christmas. So you went from house to house and you still had the nuts and the fruit that had to be in the Christmas stocking.
Huh.
Those are also rural. You talk
right.
to people who say, yes, while we don't, you know, cane syrup anymore, once a year, everybody comes to the house. And we take the sugar cane and we make the syrup.
Hmm.
So those kinds of traditions are still alive.
Right.
We have a young lady who is our PR person who grows chickens. She didn't grow up in rural South Carolina.
Right.
But she shares the eggs and wants people to understand that this is a part of why she still lives here.
Right.
So when you say rural, it's done for those of us who love it. It just means love.
Hmm.
It means a way in which we can share who we are and what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And urban people feel the same way. So the divide is muted. It's gray.
Right.
And it's okay.
Right. That's a great answer. Well, that's all for today. Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure meeting with you and talking about everything that's going on here in Denmark.
Well, thank you.
Stay tuned for more episodes coming out soon. If you have ideas for other guests you'd like for us to talk to, please let us know. Our information is on the show notes as well.
Thanks for listening to the Growing Rural Podcast. If you found the content valuable, please leave a rating on iTunes or Spotify so others can find us. For more information, please visit our website at sc.edu/rural healthcare or follow us on Twitter at sc_CRPH. This was recorded at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Columbia. It is edited and produced by Sean Riffle. Y'all take care.